Hello and welcome to the High Potential Startups interview series. I'm your host, Nick Taylor, and this podcast is sponsored by Octopus Ventures, one of Europe's largest and most active VCs with over £1 billion under management and a portfolio of more than 100 companies. Their investment teams specialize in five areas: health, fintech, deep tech, consumer, and business-to-business software. The health team is looking to back entrepreneurs who are transforming the health industry, from digital therapeutics through to biotech at seed, Series A and B funding, making them the perfect partners for this podcast as we talk to CEOs at the cutting edge of the life science space, discussing their careers, the highs and lows, as well as taking a much closer look at the future plans of the businesses they are leading. Today, Octopus Ventures has backed some of the most disruptive startups in health, including Elvi, Big Health, Overture, Ori Biotech, and Quick Genius. This week, I'm excited to say we are joined by Chris Nowers, CEO of ONK Therapeutics, a biotech with its origins in Ireland and a new base in San Diego, who are developing the next generation of off-the-shelf, dual-targeted NK cell therapies. Chris joined ONK in October last year, having previously been the CEO of Cell Medica and formerly the head of Europe for Kite Pharma. Hi, Chris. Great to have you on the show. Really pleased to get the opportunity to talk to you about your background and your history and also your new job. I think 6 months still counts as new, still must feel like a big challenge. Welcome to the show. And for the audience sake, can you give them a brief introduction on yourself?
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. And great to be on the program and to join your listeners. I'm Chris Nowers. I'm the CEO of ONK Therapeutics. As you say, relatively new to role, having joined in October of last year. And me, my background really is pure healthcare. I've been in the industry the whole of my career. That's 30 plus years. And really my entry into the industry was really driven from my early studies as a biochemist and my sort of intense interest in the human body, coupled with our increasing ability to influence biochemical pathways and change the progression of disease. With that background, it really seemed like a natural fit to me to enter into the healthcare industry.
Good. And so biochemist by education, first step into industry, was that through the lab route? Was that as a scientist? Have you come up through the scientific ranks? What was your first step into industry?
Yeah, an interesting question. When you look at my career, it does have a commercial bias, but obviously, given some of the senior roles that I've had, it crosses all of the matrix functions. When I was studying biochemistry, I did spend a good amount of time in the lab. And while I enjoyed the research that I did, it did dawn on me pretty quickly that the lab environment wasn't where I wanted to base my career. So have untold respect for the researchers and left university thinking, well, how can I apply the interests that I have? How can I go into the healthcare industry? And it was a little bit of a crude entry, key questions like what jobs paid well, what jobs gave you a company car? And I actually entered the industry in the role of a sales rep based in Southeast London. But I have to say, in no way does that belittle the role of a sales rep, because my memories of being a rep are vivid to this day. And I would have to say that that role is incredibly rich in both industry and personal personal learnings. And from that base, that really gave me the opportunity to develop a pretty eclectic career that's taken me all over the globe, returning to the UK in 2016 after 23 years of roles in different companies in different countries. And, puts me in a position where I have a pretty broad experience and broad purview to, the workings of both large and small companies.
Okay. I wanted to understand the influences and mentors that have been through your career that have had real big impact on decisions you've made, choices you make, the way you've developed as an individual and developed into the CEO you are now. Can you tell us a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've had the good fortune to have good mentors throughout my career, really. And if they haven't been you know, forthcoming. I've sought them because I think it's a really important additional development process. You know, companies put you through training programs and development programs, but seeing a senior member of the company in action, watching them closely, sharing your perspective and ideas with them outside of a work stream through an agreed mentorship program, I think is critically important. You know, whether it be my time as a sales rep where, you know, my district manager was not only my manager, but he was my mentor, whether it be the general manager at Zeneca, a gentleman called Mike Gatenby, who taught me an enormous amount of business early in my career, whether it be Giovanni Caforio at Bristol Myers Squibb, Sean Tomasello. Again, if you are lucky enough to secure the commitment from a senior leader to mentor you, then you know, it's worth its weight in gold. And my career has certainly benefited from the relationships that I've had with mentors over the years.
Okay, and there's some phenomenal names there in terms of individuals. Were there certain things that drew you to them and drew you to the, you know, you mentioned that actually you were proactive in engaging some of these people. What were the draws? What were the things you were looking for? Did you identify pieces within yourself that you said, actually, I need to improve on this, and there's this role model and leader that does X, Y, and Z? Or was it just a sort of natural instinct to think, you know, that's the kind of person I want to become, that's the kind of leader I want to be? What was the driver to selecting those people?
Yeah, I think it's really that latter point, you know, that I saw them as the type of leader that I wanted to become. You know, whether it be their ability to coalesce a team, you know, make the most of challenging situations, drive critically important meetings, just those softer skill sets, and watching, you know, the respect that they garnered. You know, people respect people of quality, and you know, as an emerging leader, you can choose to develop in various different ways. And I chose to, you know, have a pathway that was aligned with the great examples that I saw. And that's what drove me to approach the people. And you know, if the mentor situation wasn't in place, to proactively request it. And most people are pretty forthcoming if they have the bandwidth and the time to you know, to give you that opportunity and the benefit of their experience. So it certainly, as I say, has been a really useful aspect of my development over time.
Okay, great. So sales as it was, sales as it is today, of course, even over the last 12 months, radically changed. You're no longer the bag carrier, right? There's no longer the knocking or kicking down doors to get your opportunities. And sales just in pharmaceuticals has changed quite radically from where it was, the shift and regulations that are in place and the need to use good science and medical affairs to really drive the outcomes of a business. And you've seen, I wanted to touch on, just on that note, I think a couple of different pieces, because you've seen the lens through both pharmaceuticals and diagnostics, from a sales perspective and leading teams within both functions. Do you see much difference in the way people need to operate to be successful in the space? Or is it actually relatively consistent? Are the traits of a good salesperson in pharmaceuticals, diagnostics, the same as the ones you probably label in a tech business or a software business? What have you seen in your experience? What makes a great sales individual?
Yeah, I mean, I think the essence of the craft of selling is similar across industries. You know, there has to be clear communication of the promotional story, the benefits to the end user, in our case, the patient. And, you know, I guess the transition over time has been the different stakeholders and the different messaging that has to be taken to those stakeholders. And by that, I mean, obviously, there are the prescribers, there are the support staff, nursing staff as an example, there are payers, So there's a much broader set of stakeholders that need to understand what the product brings to the healthcare community, I guess, and the treatment team. And that is a little bit more sophisticated than was the time when I was a representative, where really we had a key focus on the physician, the prescribing physician, and the support nursing staff. But now I believe, quite rightly, that a sales rep is much more of a broader business person that has to, you know, ensure that all stakeholders understand the benefit of the therapy that they're selling.
Okay. It's interesting. You talk as a sales individual. You talk, of course, a lot of the pieces that you mentioned there all come from the base of marketing. Now, marketing influences your success, and that appreciation of both sides of what the tools you need as a successful sales individual from other people in the business to make it happen. And you come up through and into those commercial positions. But was there a transition point where you said, look, actually, for me, knocking on doors is no longer the route for me. Taking into management positions and going through that route was the right path. Was it either a lack of interest in knocking on the doors anymore, or was it more a passion about looking after people and helping people?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was a drive to really achieve positions that could have more influence upon the overall programs. And, you know, my first job in head office was actually called Sales and Marketing Liaison Executive. And it was an interesting role that was put in place in Zeneca in the UK. And the objectives of the role were really to communicate to the marketing team what was required from the sales team in order to achieve their objectives effectively. And then the second half of the role was to spend a good amount of time in the sales team to feedback to the marketing what was being effective and what were winning strategies. So it was a very interesting role across the sales and marketing team, where there's a natural dynamic tension and giving input into both sides of the equation for the greater good. So that was my first experience. And that was a really good role to set out some foundational learnings, if you like. And then I moved into marketing proper, and had a range of roles in oncology and respiratory medicine. And that's when I started to expand the breadth and depth of my experience. And that was all based in the UK. And then, you know, probably 4 or 5 years into that experience, I then moved up to the next level, which was a marketing / commercial role, pan-European, working at Amgen, out of their European office in Switzerland. So a natural progression of experience and seniority. And that was really, set me on the tracks to, live out my true ambition, was to get to a role where my influence was as one of the key leaders in a team to, have that level of influence and enjoy the level of excitement that comes from those kind of leadership roles.
Okay. Jump all the way to today. The pieces that you look at most, the pieces that you spend the most time reviewing in terms of what you want to influence, how do you feel like you can have the biggest impact as a CEO in the business?
When you're in a role such as CEO, you have certain privileges. One is, you have a good say in the construction of the team. You have a good say in collaboration with your senior management team to mold and evolve the culture of the company. And of course, you have a good say in, again, in the matrix team to set the strategy and make the choices that in a company has to make. And, I think that the way I look at those, key projects, I take a very pragmatic view. I'm a big fan of the matrix team, harnessing diverse opinions across all of your closest colleagues to ensure that, you put forward strategic choices and then you make decisions as to the direction that the company is going to prioritize. And, that's a mix of excitement and fear, but it's something that I really do enjoy. And, if you have the right team in place, you can do some very special things. And, you know, the right team in place with the right culture, that's a really important quality of an organization for me.
Okay, great. And just to wind back then, so there's a particular position that I wanted to talk about, one that I think in terms of as an external and someone watching the industry and the way the industry evolved during my career, the impact and rate and change Plat Pharma had on European biotech, and I think the way Europe works now. I still talk to business leaders that have come off that journey in Europe of Plat Pharma that are leading a number of businesses out elsewhere. I think the ripple effect that that organization has had has been really powerful. You headed up the European function. What was day one like versus the end of your tenure, the end of the sort of 2 years that you were with the business?
Starting myself on a laptop, that gave me some great opportunities to build the team that I could personally select. And rest assured, I don't employ everybody that looks or thinks like Chris Nowers. You know, keen on diversity, keen to bring different opinions to the table, and experiences from, as we did, big pharma companies, biotech companies, and, you know, the anchor of the type of person that we were looking for were those that were willing to take a risk, that saw the excitement in the potential evolution of cell therapy, and really understood that this was an opportunity to change medical history and clinical practice. And, you know, I consider myself a pretty good read of people, and you can really see that innate enthusiasm and hunger when you're interviewing people. And that was the sort of the type of person that we brought into the team. And we also, you know, thought hard about attitude. You know, I have a favorite expression, you can't buy attitude. Because people's attitude gives you a really good inkling as to whether they're going to fit and contribute to the culture that you want to drive throughout an organization.
Okay. And I expect there was a big US influence just on how the business, not the business built itself, but how the culture was, even though it was you as one individual with a laptop day one, and this big US presence influencing day-to-day or influencing the way people get on with things in the morning. Would you say was the culture very different? Were there big similarities? How straightforward was it translating that US business into an international business and a European business?
Yeah, so I think the culture was pervasive throughout the organization. It was a really exciting culture, very thoughtful culture, and that really came from the top down, from the executive team. But because the team was so aligned, it was fairly easy to have a similar cultural outlook in Europe as well as in the US. Now, obviously, Europe is very different from the US. And, you know, there are plans to take you through to regulatory approval, a greater degree of consistency there. But there are plans to take you through to a price. And obviously, Europe is extremely different from the US. And that was, you know, one of our first objectives as we built the organization and plan, was having that North Star in view, which was at the end of the day, post regulatory approval, you have to secure a price. And that meant that that was our call to action for the total organization and its support of Europe, is which data sets would we need to ensure that were forthcoming in order to support the reimbursement dossiers. And, you know, cell therapy was undoubtedly more advanced in the US. So how could we use the US infrastructure and thought leaders and infuse a lot of that expertise into the European region? And again, you know, several big asks of the US organization, which, you know, didn't fit in their top 10 priorities initially. But as we showed the value of developing the second region in Europe, then it became more fluid, and we were able to request and were given more resources from the US team to build out the structure, the thought leader influence in Europe, which was very important.
Okay. And so you've gone from Kite Pharma, well-established US presence, and you've had big European, big global positions in the past, from BMS to Kite to Genomic Health, and then into Cell Medica. Would you say actually there were big similarities in that culture piece? You talked about Kite having this energy and pace and desire to go off and achieve a goal. Was that similar in Cell Medica when you joined the company?
Very different. And in fact, you know, that Cell Medica was my second stepping stone in cell therapy. Obviously, at Kite, we were looking at autologous CAR T cell therapies. And when I joined Cell Medica was in fact a 12-year-old company, which had cell therapy assets. And when I joined the company, we refocused the strategic emphasis of the company to anchor solely on cell therapy. So Cell Medica were exploring the potential of natural killer T cells in both an autologous and allogeneic setting. But, you know, culturally very different, because it was an established company with an established team, with established roles. And, you know, if I'm honest, it didn't have the same excitement in its culture. It was a very effective company, but it didn't have the same enthusiasm for the fact that we were trying to do something life-saving and change clinical practice. And that's something that I set about as CEO to really infuse into the company, to give people, you know, that unwavering ambition as to what we're trying to do as a company. And, you know, we made good progress following the strategic reprioritization. And, you know, we moved from preclinical to a clinical setting with the natural killer T cell programs. And again, interestingly, that at that time, we were the only company exploring natural killer T cells, which is exciting, but it's a bit of a double-edged sword, in that it's exciting because you have a unique approach, but it's daunting because nobody really is there supporting the approach, and you get a lot of questions as to why natural killer T cells. But a really interesting experience, and really enjoyable to be part of that transition to a cell therapy focus within the company.
Okay. And I was fortunate enough to do some more work for Cell Medica. And of course, one of the pieces I wanted to ask about, because is your Cell Medica was very much office-based environment, very close-knit. You know, I remember putting people into the business that had met pretty much everyone in the office by the time they joined. They'd gone through the full process. They'd really got that full sense of what it was like in the environment. And now you're in a business where you're the only one in the UK, and everyone else is San Diego Island. Industries around the world, everyone's had to get used to it. One difference in therapeutics, of course, is the scientists are still back in the lab. They're seeing each other Monday to Friday. They're still there. Have you found that transition from being in a business where you knew you could pick up the phone and call a landline number and get an answer, to now you're the one person on their own and trying to manage an international business with that presence?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. It's been a very unique experience. You know, just to contextualize it, when I joined the company in October, we were four people in the team. We're now 22 people in the team. And, you know, since October, I've never met anybody in the company other than on the screen. So it really is a strange dynamic, but now we spend hours on the screen. So it's part of normal life. That's not to say that I am totally looking forward to going to Galway in Ireland and San Diego in California to meet the teams, because while you can do a lot, and we have done an enormous amount working virtually, you know, you can't take away from that personal presence and that personal interaction. So looking forward to it. But again, you know, can't take away with what the company has achieved. You know, we've grown the team by 18 people. You know, we're very selective in our interview process. So again, a lot of screen time and you know, an interesting dynamic for candidates as well. But, you know, we've been really pleased with the people that we've invited into the company. You know, we've used our meetings architecture and a sort of proactivity to acknowledge that executing meetings on the screen is very different to executing them in person. And if that means that we're a little bit more slow-paced in our discussions, a little bit more proactive in asking for opinions around the room, which you can, you know, do through natural body language when you're in the same room, you have to be a little bit more structured and determined to really get the same from a virtual meeting. But it's worked well. We've progressed the plan. We've written the new plan, and you know, really pleased with how it's gone. You know, the added dimension, you know, when we do have meetings with the scientists team in the labs, you've got that extra dynamic because they're together as a group. They're all masked. And so even that is a very different dynamic, having a conversation when you can't see the majority of the person you're talking to's face, and you certainly can't see, you know, their lips moving. So interesting dynamics, but we've overcome the challenges, and I think we have a really good process in place now.
Great. And do you think long term, of course, long term, you've got experience being out in the States, being out in Europe. Is it very much the case of keeping both locations will be center points for the organization for different reasons?
Yes, we felt it was important to start a US footprint. And, you know, back at the end of last year, we presented the company to the Johnson & Johnson Innovations Committee, and they liked our company's project. And they offered us space in the JLabs ecosystem in San Diego. So that was one part of our driver to be in San Diego. The second is, it is quite a hotbed of NK cell companies. So there's a good deal of talent out there. And, you know, we've been very lucky to secure some key talent into that growing team in our lab there. You know, it's headed by an individual called Rohit Dugal, who's not only experienced in cell therapy, but also in NK cell therapy, having worked at NantWest and Sorrento. So good to have a US footprint, good to have access to the talent pool, were some of the key drivers as to why we expanded from our main lab, which is in Galway Island, to incorporate the San Diego lab.
Okay. And for anyone listening that's in those locations, if they're considering opportunities, are you... So plans across the next 6 months, are there ambitions to keep going in terms of headcount and bringing in more of the right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have a pretty functional team at the moment, but I'm sure we'll get on to talking about financing. Once we have our next financing in place, we have expansion in the plan, and that involves bringing in new individuals into both labs in San Diego and Galway. And I would have to say that we've been absolutely delighted with the quality of scientists who have seen the interesting approach that we've taken, and then had sufficient interest to commit to joining the team. And we've got two super inquisitive teams who are doing great work across all the facets that you'd imagine for a company like us who's looking at engineered NK cell therapy. So, you know, a really good start.
Okay. And then, for the wider audience that are considering removal or want to look more into RNK, what do you think the differentiator to the business is? What's the reason that they should join RNK Therapeutics than one of the other NK cell therapy businesses in the area?
Sure. Well, I mean, I can probably frame that by describing why I joined the company. Right. You know, I have a good amount of cell therapy experience, having worked on different cell types. And, you know, midway through last year, was fortunate enough to be introduced to Michael O'Dwyer, who's the company founder and now CSO. And I was really intrigued by the hypothesis. Obviously, everybody recognizes the excitement around NK cells. You know, they are the central coordinator of the innate immune system. NK-based cell therapies don't appear to have some of the safety challenges that have been initially identified in the T cell therapy space, you know, no cytokine release syndrome, no significant neurotox. So they're a very interesting cell type with regard to an off-the-shelf application. And, you know, that as a baseline, then it's really interesting to look at the different strategies that companies in the NK cell space are deploying. And obviously there are naked NK cells or unengineered NK cells. There are CAR NK cells. And at ONK Therapeutics, we're exploring a third and highly differentiated approach, which is a dual targeted NK cell therapy. Dual targeted in the construct expresses a CAR targeting the antigen of interest, so very similar to the CAR NK therapies, but in addition expresses a TRAIL variant. And TRAIL variants target the death receptor pathway. So you end up with a double killer construct, and a double killer construct that maximizes cytotoxicity through the engagement of the CAR and the antigen that drives intrinsic apoptosis. And then you have this second mechanism of cytotoxicity, the TRAIL variant, that engages with the death receptor pathway and drives the extrinsic apoptotic pathway. So not only are you maximizing your kill potential, but importantly, the CAR is driven by antigen-dependent killing, and the TRAIL variant is antigen-independent. So in instances where there's loss of antigen, and we know that loss of antigen is a known mechanism of resistance for CAR therapy, you still have the second mechanism of killing that's driven through the TRAIL variant. So in instances of loss of antigen, it's almost an insurance policy that you've still got a killing mechanism. And we believe that that's a really interesting hypothesis that we're exploring. And if it lives through proof of concept, then it will not only provide cells that have a very different functional profile, but also have a very different therapeutic potential profile as well.
Okay, phenomenal. You sort of got to the very cutting edge of science throughout your career, pretty consistently over the last 5 to 10 years, been right at the forefront of cell therapy pieces. Is there a reason that you've always stayed in life sciences, and have you ever considered moving out of life sciences? As an individual with a sales background, I'm sure there's been points where someone said, well, you can sell stocks and shares and make more money out of it. Why stay in the industry? Why have you built 30 years and also tied to that? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to this passion for working on innovation. And have I thought about leaving the industry? Sure. But, whenever I do my comparisons, I don't think you can beat the healthcare industry. The industry is on occasion heavily critiqued, and rightly so. But it's my bias that the industry is able to do some pretty wondrous things. A lot of my time has been spent in oncology. And when you think of the challenges that cancer patients face, I can't think of a better job. And you ask what gets me out of bed in the morning. We all work long hours. We have challenging roles. But I love what I do. And, we have a statement at ONK Therapeutics, engineering NK cells to cure cancer.
Thanks for listening to the first half of this interview. Chris and I go on to talk in more depth on the upcoming plans for the business, including details on their current IP position, manufacturing and fundraising efforts. If you're an investor in the space and you're keen to hear more, reach out to me at nick.ross@cavanaghhealth.com or via the Cavanagh Health website. All links will be with the podcast.